the first of two episodes of interviews with super listeners to the Peter B. Collins podcast. I'm grateful to everyone who put up with my ranting and raving for all these years, and it was hard to pick out a few select listeners to feature in these two episodes. We continue on the last interviews here at the Peter B. Collins podcast, and we're focusing on listeners like you, who dedicated time and effort and often contributed money to support the Peter B. Collins podcast over many years. And of course, a guy like me who talks and talks and talks would be nothing without people who listen, listen, and listen. Joining me now is Paul Elsesser. He lives north of Sacramento in, the town of Durham. And he has been a longtime listener and a very generous contributor to the PBC podcast. Paul, welcome.
Thank you, Peter B.
So I just really appreciate people like you, and you were very engaged in the podcast, and you would send me emails with links to information, occasional arguments of disagreement. So tell me a little bit about what drew you to the podcast and when you had a chance to listen on a regular basis.
Well, I first heard you when you were working in the Bay Area at KGO, subbing for Gene Burns, I think it was, and then I heard you were a guest host for Tom Hartman. I started listening to Hartman, and you guest hosted for him, and I think that's when I learned about your Monterey station, which I then started downloading your podcasts and stuff from your Monterey station from the website.
Okay.
And then when you shut that down, I followed you to your podcast, and was there from the beginning until to the end.
Yeah, that's great. Well, KRXA in Monterey, I was on the air there until 2009, and that's when the economy forced me to shut down the syndicated show. And because we had been archiving those programs, I had built up some listeners outside of the signal area of KRXA, and it gave me a launching pad when we started the podcast in June of 2009. So that makes you more than an 11-year veteran. And, Paul, I want you to know that a few years back, you sent me a Post-it note with three words, Corporate Propaganda Ministry! ! And I still have it. I would put it on my computer screen. And then when there was an opportunity to invoke it, I would then just transfer it to the article of the day that I was reading from or commenting on. Then I'd put it back on the computer. And there is no glue left on the back of this Post-it note.
Thank you for using that. I remember hearing it a few times. I use it when I write letters to the editor, because I rail on the media pretty regularly with my little local paper in Chico.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I invoke that quite a bit. And
Well, it came in handy on many opportunities. It's a great reminder about the corruption and just the dereliction of the media today. So I just want to ask you if you can, tick off maybe two or three memorable interviews or commentaries that you heard. And then I also want to force you to criticize me and offer some of the ones that you either deeply disagreed with or you just thought, wow, that was a stinker.
Okay, well, I can't think of a specific podcast, but I know almost all of them that you had with Brad Friedman were excellent. He's a personality. I've listened to a few of his podcasts even.
Yeah.
But he enlightened us all, and his reporting about, you know, elections and stuff was and is very important.
Yeah.
And I love listening to your conversations with Brad. In fact, I think I sent you a comment a while back, a year or two ago. I don't know. I've lost time. It's been so many years. About, you know, like to have him on a little more. And you did this year a couple times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the only reason I've had him on less frequently is that he is so damn busy. He does his own live radio show in Los Angeles, and then he puts it out as the Bradcast podcast. And, you know, I just we had limited windows. The last time I interviewed him, I had to do it in the evening to align our schedules.
He's a good source. He's probably somebody I'll be listening to now that I won't have you to listen to, you know?
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah. One of the others, too, that I really enjoyed, and you interviewed him several times, and I read his book, was John Perkins.
Yeah.
What an eye-opening that was.
You know, Perkins, the two most downloaded podcasts in you know, my history were three different interviews I did with Perkins. And the other most downloaded, it hit more than a million, was my interview with the father of John Walker Lind, the so-called American Taliban. And Frank Lind, I think it was one of the longer podcasts I had done, maybe 90 minutes. But we told the family's perspective on his whole odyssey. And I do not know how people discovered it and why so many people listened to it, but it was, along with Perkins, one of the top.
Yeah, well, good. That's, you know, I recall that interview, and I remember you talking about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my third favorite is one you just did recently. I mean, you've done a number of them with him, and that's Dr. Justin Frank.
Yeah.
I love his diagnosis of the presidents, especially Trump. Which is, you know, it's frightening how mentally ill that man is.
Yeah. No, and, Dr. Frank is somebody who I've bonded with. The two of us have never actually met. We threaten to do it when COVID permits. But we just really connected, and he's not one of those he is actually a professor who has taught psychiatry, but he's not one of those people who just does a monologue. And so he dialogued with me, and, you know, we educated each other in some respects. He educating me about psychiatry and me helping him a little bit with politics.
Yeah, I recall you guys talking about that. In fact, every time I think I've listened to him, he's complimented you on how you've enlightened him, you know, too. So that's good. I hope he writes his book about the Trump supporters that he mentioned in the last interview.
I agree.
Those people, it'd be nice to understand them a little bit better. I mean, I have some friends, just like we all do, that believe that guy's the answer, and we know that's not true.
Yeah. All right, so, Paul, where did you disagree with me or just shake your head and say, Peter, did you really say that?
Well, you'll remember one of them, the second one. But the first one is actually with another guy whose podcasts or your interviews with him I really loved, and that's Justin Frank.
Mm-hmm.
He's a bright, articulate man and a great writer.
Now, I think you mean Tom.
Kansas.
But you mean, you mean Thomas Frank. You just called him Justin.
I'm sorry. You're right. Thomas Frank.
Yeah, go ahead.
Excuse me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thomas Frank. And, but the one podcast where he started going off about Obama, I sent you a lengthy comment on it. When he started going off about Obama, you know, was doing this and doing that, and I think I said something to you about the only people he's helping are the bankers and the bombardiers. and then I recommended that he listen to your podcast to be a little bit better informed, because he spewed a bunch of stuff that just kind of showed that he wasn't really. You know, and I imagine he's a busy man being an author and all, that he doesn't have the time to take in as much news as you or I do, especially you.
Well,
so it's
you know,
a little bit understandable, but that's one of them that I recall specifically. And
well, I'm glad you brought it up, because I will say this, and, you know, it wouldn't hurt Tom Frank's feelings, but there were a few times when I cringed and said, Tom, you don't know about this?
Yeah.
And they're, you know, he's there in the beltway, in the bubble. I think, you know, some things just either passed him by or he didn't seem concerned about them. But, I hear exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, as I recall, your reply was that you largely agreed with what I said, and well, and the other one is a fairly recent one, and that was your interview with Max Blumenthal about his takedown of the green energy movement, at, you know, after viewing Planet of the Humans.
Right.
Uh-huh. If you remember, we exchanged a couple of emails about that, and I wrote a couple of pretty lengthy pieces. And while I don't want to bring up all of it again, mm-hmm. it's just, you know, that was one that I disagreed with. I mean, you know, I sent you a question to ask him about, you know, how much about the outdated and outright disinformation were included in that video, right?
Yeah.
And you, to your credit, you aired my comment. Thank you. And but you know, he basically ducked the main question about the outdated information and false information.
Right.
And then when I cited his own acknowledgement in an article that was linked in your podcast about the recycling efforts.
Mm-hmm.
He admitted the recycling was going on, but then he changed the subject about the damage from wind farms.
Yeah.
And so basically, like I said, in my emails to you, that there's enough information in that stuff, in that video, to get the people that aren't really invested in this stuff, that know a little bit more about it, to make it believable. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, you know, good propaganda. Good propaganda's got a little bit of truth to it, you know?
Right, yeah.
And there was some truth to this. So listen, I'm sure that, you know, that there's people that are benefiting. I mean, capitalism has a way of doing that, of getting people to, you know, line their pockets when they can. And there's no doubt that's been happening with some of the people that are in the movement. And, but like I said, that was the one. And, so one of them that stuck out in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So, but like I said, again, thanks for airing my comments, man. That's one of the things you're best about is presenting both sides of the argument, you know?
I do what I can. So, Paul, as we wrap up here, do you have any other podcasts or independent media outlets that you want to recommend to listeners who are bereft at my departure?
Yeah, a few that I've listened to over the years, and I'll probably go back to listening to them a little bit more now that I don't have you. I mean, I usually listen to you when I take my dogs for a dog walk down to the park and back every morning. It takes about 45 minutes, an hour. I can almost do one of your news and comment podcasts, you know. But one of them that I listened to for a long time is antiwar.com with Scott Horton.
Yeah. Yeah, Scott.
Excellent guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I would recommend to people, too, that they listen to the broadcast with Brad Friedman.
Mm-hmm.
And then I discovered a new one here just recently from an article I got from another webpage called Economics and Beyond with Rob Johnson. It's on podbeam.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a really good article about a book that and he interviews an author about a really good book about, you know, the failings of capitalism and how it's, you know, and I mean, we can all see it. Anybody that's paying attention can see that it's failing around us all the time and only getting worse.
All right. I'll check that out. I have the Podbean app on my phone, but I haven't really gone deep there. So I will definitely explore that. Well,
yeah.
Paul, you have told me that you're about 5 years ahead of me in the retirement game. Do you have any advice for me as I head into these uncharted waters?
Yeah, well, just enjoy it, and you'll learn to get over the feeling that you feel like you got to be doing something all the time. And sit around and then enjoy it. You can do it tomorrow, you know. I mean, it's nice to stay busy. And when I first retired, in fact, because of that syndrome or whatever you want to call it, I was so busy, I don't know how I worked. I was taking on home projects and doing all kinds of stuff. But now with a little bit more retirement practice under my belt, I've learned to control that urge.
All right. I'll work at it. It's probably going to take me a while. Paul Elsesser, right here in California, thanks for being with us today.
Peter B., thank you, man. Every subscriber here is thankful for you. Thank you.
One of my favorite songs of all time sets us up for our next Super Listener interview. The song is by New Order, and it's called True Faith. Faith Peoples of Pittsburgh has been a longtime loyal listener, and I lost track of how many subscriptions she had. Faith Peoples joins me now. She's a longtime listener to the Peter B. Collins podcast and a very generous supporter. Faith, I think at one point you had four or five different subscriptions. Am I right?
Yeah, but I wasn't that generous. I had $5 subscriptions, and then I tried to consolidate one, and I added an annual, and then I got a couple of gift subscriptions for people.
Well, I really appreciate you being an evangelist for the podcast. And in a note you sent me a few days ago, you said that you can't remember how you found me.
I don't remember how I found you, but when I did, this was way before PBC News and Comment.
Mm-hmm.
So you had you had switched to a podcast by then.
Yeah, I started podcasting in 2009.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. See, I had done a syndicated radio show I was on satellite radio, and then we expanded to more what we call terrestrial stations, AM stations. And so that lasted until the economy crashed and Obama came in 2009. And his campaign didn't do anything to support liberal talk radio. It was very interesting and quite frustrating. And so the combination of the market crash and the failure of Air America, which had
I was a listener.
Yeah. And that really, there weren't enough stations for us to put a syndicated program on. And that's what really forced my hand to say, well, I have listeners who listen to the podcast created from the daily radio show. So that was the base that I used to launch the podcast, and it grew nicely from there.
Yeah, so, I think I caught you at the very beginning then of your podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And when did you – and then you switched the format to – News and Comment.
Yeah, I think it was about a year in that
I
did the split feed where I did what was originally a half hour a day. And then, you know, I would do the interview podcasts on a separate feed. And that started, I think, in 2010, but I'd have to go back and look. But I want to know about you, Faith. Tell our listeners, you know, what you do or what you did. And I believe you live in Pittsburgh, right?
I live in Pittsburgh. I'm retired, and I'm homebound now,
mm-hmm.
Like almost totally. I don't go out very much because I'm one of the people who is at risk.
Yeah.
And so my life is podcasts and news and talking on the phone and very, very limited.
Yeah. And tell me, you know, if you have a recollection of either some of the comments I've made or some of the interviews I've done that have really stuck with you.
I can remember issues and themes more than specific. Well, there's some specific podcasts I remember. The podcast you did was about all the ways in which Obama begat Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Torture, surveillance, police state, you know, all the things that are in place for Trump to flourish,
yeah.
So to speak. Your podcast, your surveillance podcast, your podcast with the whistleblowers, I'm trying to think, I'm blanking right now.
I understand. It's hard for me, too. You know, I go back,
yeah.
And one of the things I'm going to do after I stop my routine work is I'm going to be posting some of what I think were the most interesting interviews. So I'll be reposting them on the homepage at peterbcollins.com. And there are a few I can recall. Tom Hayden's final interview is one that really touched me.
Yeah, that was touching.
The whistleblowers you mentioned are very important to the work that I've done.
John Kiriakou, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And what did I say or do that really pissed you off, Faith, that just said, that guy, I'm mad at him.
You know, I really can't think of anything. I've never had a visceral negative reaction to what you say. I think we're pretty much in line.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah. One time, this is the only thing I can think of, and I can't remember who you were talking about or which podcast it was, but it was about a woman. And you used a phrase that I found offensive, and it seems so out of character for you.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what it was.
Mm-hmm.
like Dumb Blonde or something. It wasn't that, but yeah, just to give you a taste of what it was. That was the only thing I ever reacted to, and I've never heard you use it again or say that, because that's just not the way. That's the only thing I can think of, and it's so so minor. It's the only thing I could think of. That was the only time I ever had a visceral reaction, like, Peter B., how, this isn't you. So,
I think I attempted a joke once that not all dumbs are blonde.
Maybe. No, this wasn't a joke.
Okay.
No, this wasn't a joke. And I think you only said it twice, but I was really, like, sort of taken aback.
Uh-huh.
But that's it.
Okay.
And you're a man. That's the way it goes.
I confess.
Well, it is. You know, it's just,
yeah, I'll cop to that.
Yeah.
So, Faith, help us out. A lot of listeners have said, okay, you're going away and you can't be replaced. But what else do you listen to that is in the same zone as what I do that you can recommend to our listeners?
Okay, I'll alternative radio.
Mm-hmm.
It's monthly, but not regular. They put out usually these are like speeches or addresses to an audience that have been recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, an example is Michael Parenti on democracy.
Okay.
Paul Street, these are episodes. Paul Street, the anti-democratic U.S. Constitution. Howard Zinn, Second Thoughts on the First Amendment. Alternative radio. That's not, but citations needed. Do you know that one?
No, I don't.
Oh, you're going to love it.
Okay.
Oh, you have to listen to it. Citations Needed is with Nima Shirazi. I don't know his background, but he's a very clever guy, very witty.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a few chuckles. And Adam Johnson, you know who he is.
Yes.
He wrote with Fair, right? He still writes with Fair.
Mm-hmm.
Their podcast is excellent, Media Criticism. And it's the best one out there. That's my second podcast after you.
Okay.
I mean, they have titles like The Always Stumbling U.S. Empire. This is Media Criticism. Now, the way the media presents, oh, the poor United States has been drawn into another conflict. You know, it's not our fault. We're the good guys.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. Oh, What the Hell is Wrong with MSNBC? Part one and part two. Part two is the rebuttal. I don't remember anything about the rebuttal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of some other things they've done. They did do two episodes on climate change that were excellent. That the Republicans, you know, they don't believe in climate change, and the Democrats are in pretty much total denial. Anyhow, it's an excellent, high quality intellectual podcast.
Okay. And I want to throw one in here because I'm a big fan of Jennifer. I can't summon her last name right now, but she is the host of Congressional Dish. Jen Briney is her name.
Yes, yes, I have listened to several of her podcasts.
And she does such detailed investigation of congressional bills and the lobbyists who, you know, line up on both sides to try to shape them. And she's in her 30s, and I just have the highest regard for her.
Yes,
and
you're
going
the one who introduced me to her. Now, I'm not a regular listener of her podcast, but I look down her list to see what I'm interested in,
mm-hmm.
because they are so detailed.
Yeah.
And it takes time
mm-hmm.
to listen to them. It's not just sitting back and listening and saying, oh, this is interesting. I mean, it takes effort on the part of the listener, too.
Yeah.
And I have listened to several of her podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Well, Faith, I want to thank you for chatting with me today, but most importantly, the support you've given me over the years, and you've frequently emailed me with links and suggestions, and it's great to hear your voice. I've imagined, you know, what you're like. Because, you know, in radio, people have all kinds of impressions of the host, and they, you know, speculate, is he bald? Does he have a beard? And the answer to both of those questions is yes.
Well, I'm gorgeous.
But I don't know what my listeners are like, and so I can only imagine.
I think you probably, well, we probably all have very, fairly similar politics.
Yeah.
But we probably all look very different.
Well, Faith, thank you very much, and I wish you the best. I just really appreciate you as a listener.
Thank you very much, and keep us posted because we're out here, and we'll miss you.
Hey, oh, where to go, Ohio?
We're taking this song back from Rush Limbaugh. We go to the state capital, Columbus, where the O is optional, and Carl Howard holds forth on a daily basis. He is online 24/7, the fastest click in the Midwest, always likes everything I post on Facebook. Carl, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, good afternoon, sir. Yes, I am. I mean, it may not be 24/7. It might be 21/7, but it's close enough, isn't it?
It is. I have never found an hour of the day when Carl Howard was not online.
I know. It's a tragedy.
So, Carl, I'm already going to eliminate a couple of the standard questions because you told me that you don't remember how you found me or exactly how long you've been listening.
I don't. So. I tried. I can't. I'm just blanking. I cannot. I have no idea. I know it's been more than 10 years,
yeah.
But I just don't.
I do believe that very briefly my syndicated radio show was on the progressive talk station in Columbus, probably in late 2008. And I think it only ran for a few months before I had to pull the plug because there was no money in radio syndication at that point. And that's when I shifted to podcasting, which would have been in June of 2009. But, you know, we don't have to press on things you can't remember.
Yeah, the time frame is definitely close, but the specifics I'm just dead on.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if you remember, Alberto Gonzalez couldn't recall, didn't remember 472 times. So we'll give you a pass on one. So
well, his forgetfulness is profitable as opposed to me, I think.
Yeah. So, Carl, it's really interesting because you responded to my request that you join me on the podcast and said that you didn't expect it to be exquisite. So then I went to Spotify looking for a clever song about Columbus, Ohio, which I didn't actually find, the Pretenders songs about Akron. And there it was a whole package of songs called An Exquisite Collection of Songs from Columbus, Ohio.
So oh, that's twisted.
That word exquisite is just somehow bouncing around these days.
That's so funny because, I mean, the actual context of it, I looked it up and I had said exquisitely dull.
Well, I want to plug your show. Because you have turned me on to Space Patrol, which you present on Sundays during my brunch time at luxuriamusic.com.
Indeed, it is the very apex of brunch itself, yes.
Yeah, and what is interesting is you come up with a sponsor for your shows who are typically companies or products that are no longer available. And
yeah. So
it's a very cool rush of nostalgia. What was it, the Ford Fairlane recently?
Oh, yes, the 1966 Ford Fairlane.
Yeah.
Wonderful, stylish, a real performance vehicle, and not exactly in current production.
So let me tell you a quick story. My Uncle Dan, who was 6'6 and had the worst temper of any human I knew when I was growing up, he bought his older daughter a 1961 or 62 Ford Fairlane that had the hard top convertible. And we were over at his place, and he wanted to show off this new car. And so he put the hard top convertible top down. And then when he was trying to get it back up, the system failed. It balked about midway.
They had it mechanized, didn't they?
Yes. And so the top was halfway up, halfway down, and he got a sledgehammer out and just pounded it into place. And I was just stricken with fear. I said, wow, if he can do that to his brand new car, what would he do to me?
yeah. Oh, my God.
Anyway, on Space Patrol, what is your mission, Carl?
It has definitely changed because I've been running it for over 15 years.
Yeah.
At different times, it has been something closer to the way that luxury music started, which is to say, if not exactly loungy, definitely much easier listening. And then at a different point, a lot of it showcased a great quantity of what is called production library music, which is professionally produced background tracks that come from different areas, including North America and different European countries. And are used for radio and television and commercial productions.
Sure, I have a whole library
of
that stuff.
Very compelling. Not all of it, though.
Mm-hmm. Most of it is really bland. It's worse than Muzak. But you find these tracks that are just outstanding.
Yeah, that's right. Because in Europe in particular, and I would say in Germany, in Italy, in France, and in the UK, where you had real masters of the craft, such as Alan Hawkshaw, they didn't care about the backgrounding of anything. Sid Dale would be another one whose production music is still constantly turning up in commercial spots and used to be a consistent background for NFL productions. Some of it just very well, as you've seen, stands on its own and can be listened to. More recently, I have used it as background behind talkover segments as the program has shifted yet again, has become more world-based. But I continue to use that. But Justin, like, I don't have the actual vinyl, but my share files section of that is really quite large at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know a lot of songs, a lot of obscure music, and you always put out a set that includes a song I scratch my head and say, wow, that is a cool song, and I've never heard it before.
Well, I must come clean about that. In most cases, I haven't heard of them either. they will pop up due to the resourcefulness of others, and then I will just avail myself of the downloads and listen to them as thoroughly as I care to, and then plug in the ones that I think are most germane to my playlist, and that will also fit the allotted space.
Yeah.
We have a show on Saturday evenings at 9 called No Condition is Permanent that pretends to come from a sleazy bar out of Detroit, but of course does not. That is more expansive because it's 2 hours, so you'll hear some of that same music, but you'll also hear dub, surf, some actual rock, some traditional British invasion in mono. I mean, you'll hear all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
So on the weekends, it can get a bit interesting there, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I want to recommend it, luxurymusic.com, and Sundays, 11 a.m. Pacific is your prime time, right?
Yes, in West Coast time, yes. And that station is always looking for support because it is commercial-free.
Mm-hmm. So, Carl, enough about you.
right.
Tell me your reaction to, you know, different podcasts or interviews that I've done, and maybe give me 3 favorites and 3 stinkers.
probably not doing so well in the stinkers. I have admitted at one point that some of the California-specific content would make me nod off because there was just no personal relevance.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember in particular the roundtable interview circle that you had about 5G and the effects of 5G and just how different that one was than a lot of the conspiracy-based hoo-ha that is being presented elsewhere. That stuff was definitely based in fact and personal experience and should be referred to on that basis.
Well, thanks. It's a tricky area because there is so much corporate promotion for 5G about the whiz speeds and all that stuff.
Oh, and sure. I continue to see that on an almost daily basis in corporate advertising.
Yeah.
And more than that, we understand that studies that would show the harmful effects have been squelched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to mention?
There was the interview with Ai Weiwei. That was very, very effective.
Yeah, that's a personal high point for me. Getting to meet him and engage with him was really very rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
And then the story from John Kiriakou about how the two of them accidentally met on the Kurfürstendamm in Berlin.
Fascinating.
Oh, man. Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, Carl, anything else you would like to add about your experience as a listener to the PBC podcast?
I can tell you that, like, as a listener, I would, you know, go to your site and just keep refreshing the page until a new date would appear, you know. And then, I mean, I would even go over to the YouTube, even though I didn't necessarily listen to it. At various times, I would prefer to listen to the YouTube because I found that the audio on the website would skip or hiccup.
Mm-hmm.
So I would listen to the YouTube instead, and at least that way I could both click the links from the website and give a like to the YouTube. So, I mean, it's not all that much more effective, but every little bit helps, I would imagine.
Well, and, you know, only last weekend I was looking at the YouTube collection. I found a bunch of comments that people had posted there, and I didn't even know they were there. So,
I mean, that's because you don't look. I mean, there are other shows that, I mean, there's far more podcasts than anyone is able to keep track of course. But, you know, they have producers or they have staff that they specifically do keep track of the comments, or they'll have a live chat while the show is on.
Mm-hmm.
Me, I tend to hide such chats because I think they just take up too much bandwidth and slow my whole system down.
Well, I also find them to be distracting. Most of the comments are not really germane to what's going on. It's often two commenters pissing on each other. Well, Carl, I want to thank you for your long-term loyalty. You were a subscriber for a long time. I appreciate that. You helped out during...
I had managed to cut that off.
You did.
But after I did so, I got one further notification from PayPal saying it had gone through, so I'm going to have to check again now.
Oh, okay. Well, I will start refunding in December any errant contributions that get posted. And
yeah,
I also...
I mean, I almost considered just letting it go just as a token of long-term appreciation.
Well,
ultimately I didn't because you said not to.
Yeah, I appreciate the thought, but I don't need the money and I want, you know, feel free to divert it into another direction where it'll be helpful to somebody. And I just want to mention that you worked in the background with me during the ill-fated NewsBud experiment. And
right.
I appreciate the research and other help that you provided at that time.
Yeah, thank you.
Carl Howard, Columbus, Ohio, a super listener to the PBC podcast. Thank you, Carl.
You're quite welcome.
Tell it like it is. Don't be ashamed. Let your conscience be your guide.
Another super listener joins me here on a Last Interview podcast at peterbcollins.com, and she is a whistleblower who's been contributing to this program for many years now. Linda Lewis blew the whistle when she worked for the Department of Agriculture as a disaster preparedness expert, and that expertise has been very useful in a number of ways over the years. Linda, thanks for being with me today.
Thank you, Peter.
Thanks for being such a super listener, and I really respect the work that you did as a whistleblower, and I think that it sets a standard for other people who work in government, and also I have to express my gratitude for all the work that you did this year, assisting me with the daily COVID-19 update. It's much appreciated, and you did an excellent job every day.
Well, it was my pleasure, Peter. You've done so much for all of us with your podcasts over the years. And it was my immense pleasure to be able to help you out at a time when everything seems to be coming to a head.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been such a crazy year.
It certainly has.
I had no idea when I announced at the beginning of the year that, okay, I'm going to ride it out through the election and then fade off into the sunset. Just how much shit would be flying in between.
Isn't that the way it always works?
Yeah, yeah. And so, not to be too personal, but you moved from the Washington area, you lived in Maryland, I think, to the Dallas area a couple of years ago. What prompted that move, and what's it like being in Greg Abbott's Texas?
Well, I moved here because nearly all my family are here. And as far as being in Abbott's Texas, well, I got used to that because I lived here before I moved to Maryland. And the politics here haven't changed too much since Molly Ivins was chronicling it.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned her. I had a couple of really cool interviews with Molly Ivins, and she was one of those people who you'd ask a question, and I can ask some pretty long questions. Let me be self-critical, all right? Some of them are a day and a half long. And she would have 3 to 4 words that would nail her position, explain what she was thinking, and then she'd just stop. And I'm still trying to catch my breath and think of my next 4-minute question. But she was such a treasure and served up Texas and W in ways that are just so priceless.
I agree. I do wish we had her now. I can only imagine what she'd be writing.
Yeah, yeah. So tell me a little bit about your listening habits. It always is intriguing to me how people find the time for a 30-minute or this year a 60-minute long daily podcast.
Well, I haven't always had the time to listen. The podcast, though, has been enormously helpful in keeping up with things that I don't have time to become aware of by other means. And it's quite a lot of work to go through all the different media stories and newscasts on television and boil it all down to things that seem most relevant. And I think you did a superb job of doing that over the years.
Thanks.
I really appreciate that.
Well, part of it is I have innate curiosity, and another part is I have a lot of opinions. And so to be able to combine the two is therapy for a guy like me. And, you know, I tried to only cover the news stories and topics that I felt I could contribute to. So, for example, you know, I don't know much about sports or Hollywood. And you probably notice I don't talk much about sports or Hollywood. So I tend to stick with the things that I know the most about and that I feel, you know, have the strongest views on. And that helped guide me to develop a podcast where it was peculiar to me, right, my views and my interests. But I tried to specialize in things like domestic surveillance, like Guantanamo and the whole regime change policy of the U.S. government that has been consistent through administrations of either party. And those, to me, are really central to the American experience as we live in this time. And so that's what you got. That's how it all came together. And, you know, I never use any scripts. I print out articles. I mark them up. I use little sticky notes to say, remember to say this. And I often forget what I wrote on the sticky note, or I don't find time to fit it in. So it was, you know, a daily act of improvisation. And that made it challenging for me and interesting. And so it's great to get feedback from people like you that it did fit a need.
Well, you know what I noticed about your podcasts? One thing is you have a fully functioning propaganda detector, unlike much of the major media. And also you have a really great attitude of support for the disenfranchised in this country. And that was expressed by the stories you did on prisoners, whistleblowers, targets of discrimination and sexual harassment, and the population at large. I think those are the most valuable contributions you made, and your interviewing skills created a real library of educational information that I hope will never be lost.
Well, thank you for all of that. First of all, I have been, for the first time, going back through the archives all the way back to 2008, 2009. And it's interesting to me because I look at that as kind of a diary of, you know, what I was talking about at a given point in time. And it's really interesting just to examine my own odyssey and how, you know, I was so optimistic about Obama. I really thought we were going to close Guantanamo and end regime change wars and really make some dramatic change. And as I said in what was my last daily podcast, it shocked me. Just how kind of radicalized I was by observing, you know, the administration on a day-to-day basis.
Well, you weren't alone. A lot of us had great hope, and it was dashed. And I think you explained all that really well.
Well, thank you. So, Linda, you have other talents, and on Facebook, you often feature your bird photography. I just want to remark on that because you have a real eye, and it is a specialty that I particularly enjoy. I used to be a bird watcher and had bird watcher books, and, you know, we'd have a bird feeder and see what kind of unusual winged creatures would drop by to get a taste. So when did you develop your interest in birds and in photography?
That was very late in life. I think around 2014, I began watching birds in the front yard. A friend gave me a feeder to put up to provide some entertainment or keep my father occupied. He had dementia at the time. Mm-hmm. And I began filling the feeder and noticing the birds. And it was very helpful to me, too, dealing with stress to watch the birds. And I began to have an interest in logging what birds I was seeing. And I discovered a website called eBird that helped in identifying birds and provided a way to record the species one is seeing. And that information is used by scientists all around the world to track the health of the bird population and to see the effects of climate change.
Yeah.
So it's not just entertaining, but it's also a way to be a citizen scientist.
That's very cool. So, Linda, if you could, and if you can recall, what were maybe two or three of your favorite interviews or commentary podcasts?
It's hard to narrow down just a few because there were so many on great topics. And it would be nice if they were organized by topic on a web page somewhere.
Mm, that's a good idea. There is a very effective search engine on the website, so you can go in and list a topic or a guest name, and I didn't design it, but it is pretty useful. So that's the best I can come up with as an index.
Well, one that immediately came to mind was actually a series of interviews that you did on the cover-up of sexual harassment at the United States Air Force Academy. You had three interviews related to that. And I thought that was very insightful.
Can I tell you that that was listener-driven and almost accidental? A listener from Colorado Springs sent me an article about Eric Thomas, and then I interviewed Eric. Then I interviewed his corroboration, the officer who had investigated the whistleblowing that Eric did and the retaliation that he received. And then I interviewed a counselor who had been hired explicitly at the Air Force Academy to deal with the sex crimes that were occurring and the cover-ups. And she was fired in retaliation for her honesty. So I didn't intend to do three interviews. And if I'm sorry, I can't remember the listener's name who sent me the original article. But I'm very grateful to her. And that's one of the things that I'd like to mention, that this developed into an interactive community with people from all over the world emailing me with links and articles and, hey, you ought to see this and did you see that? And that's something that I value the most from this 11 and a half years of my work.
Well, it certainly is a contribution to the general understanding of sexual harassment. And I really appreciate the way you interview people. It's different from the mainstream media, which focuses on confrontation. Instead, you interview people by helping them to bring out their story, whatever it happens to be, more clearly and more meaningfully. And that's a very rare skill these days, or very rare to find.
Well, thank you. I was fortunate to be able to hone those skills over the years, working in commercial radio and doing, you know, in some cases, I do a 3-hour show and interview six people.
I also found your series of interviews of Russell Tice very valuable, because he had such a unique viewpoint of NSA surveillance very early on. And I've met Russ Tice. He's a very honest gentleman, and I believed him from the beginning.
I had lunch with Russ once, and he impressed me in so many ways, but he's physically just a very imposing presence. I mean, he's 6'5", 6'6", and a beefy guy. And he's not the kind of guy I'd want to get into a fight with.
Well, his interview comments have been proven subsequently by many other events. And so I think it helps listeners to understand why a lot of things might be happening today.
Well, and Russ, in my view, doesn't get sufficient credit for the courage that he showed early on to expose the domestic surveillance program. And there's that one story he told where he was on Larry King with Dianne Feinstein, and he wanted to tell her, "Senator, you're being wiretapped." And the secrecy rules in her demeanor prevented that. So he really was one of the early courageous people. Ed Snowden's disclosures verified everything that Russ Tice disclosed. And for whatever reason, he's not given, in my view, his fair credit for contributing to our understanding of the domestic surveillance operations.
Well, one thing I recognized in listening to your interviews, whether it was an interview of a whistleblower or of a person who was a sexual harassment target or investigator, the tactics used to try to silence people or to discredit them are remarkably the same. And that similarity is something that I think many people don't recognize unless they've been through that. And by listening to people tell their stories themselves and not being filtered by mass media, mm-hmm. I think it's much more helpful for people to understand the problem.
Yeah. Well, Linda, thank you very much. I just want to finally ask you if you, since you've been retired for a few years, if you have any advice for me. I've never done this before.
Any advice?
Yeah.
Gosh, I wish you could go on forever, but I know how much work you put into that. My little piece was pretty demanding, and you do so much more. So you've earned a nice vacation. But if you do come back, I think your interviews are probably the best part of what you've produced,
mm-hmm.
because you do that in a way that is really unique and important in helping people get these stories out. And there are many people out there with stories still untold.
Indeed. Well, Linda, thank you for being a super listener and a great contributor in many ways to the Peter B. Collins podcast. And I wish you happy trails and hope maybe someday we can meet and have a meal together or something.
That sounds great. Take care, Peter, and happy trails to you too.
Hit it, Roy. We'll have another episode of Interviews with Super Listeners coming up shortly here at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.